Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Dewey, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, but not the 12th Hour in the Oregon Church. Today is June the 8th, 2025, it is the 14th day of Sivan 2029, where we start the first service today with a song and a prayer, and we'll go right on into continuation of our study Whom does Babylon personify? That's the name of our sermon today. And so who does Babylon personify? And this is tract number 12. This is tract number 12 of Aviti Hadith. And this is part 2 of the world yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Okay, it says on page 36 here, track 12, whom does Babylon personify? It says, now that the light has completely dispelled the darkness, which has long enveloped this subject, the student of the prophecy can plainly see from the symbolism that in the first place Babylon personifies the forthcoming ecclesiastical, political, economic system of the nations, not some institution or organization. Second, that the beast she drives is a figure of her dominion, and third, that it is about to pass from prophecy into history. Indeed, is already beginning to loom up out of the haze, as did the shores of America unto Christians for Columbus and his companion as they approached the great western continent. For the beast had been driven by the woman, Babylon, clearly revealed three important truths. First, that the call of Yahweh's people to come out of Babylon, Revelation 18:4, is a call for them to come out from among the nations that are symbolized by the beast which she is driving, ruling. Second, that the called ones are to come out from her sin-filled dominion, because it is to be ruined by the plagues. And third, their coming out necessitates that going into a place where sin does not exist, where there is no danger of the place falling. Thus, coming out of her dominion must be they're going into the Yahweh's kingdom. Number three, then the warning against receiving the mark, Revelation 14:9-11, along with the call to come out, will be repeated with an ever seeing a loud cry throughout Babylon's dominion. Both those who find themselves in the dominion and those who find themselves out of it must then immediately decide to receive the seal of the Yahweh instead of the mark of the beast if they want to escape the wrath of Yahweh. To do this, the former class must come out of her, and the latter class must stay out of her, despite the death penalty for taking such a stand. Revelation 13:15. There must be no hesitation or any the decision on the part of either class. Now those who are in Babylon must need the voice which says, "Come out of her, my people, that she be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues." Revelation 18:4. And those who are out must certainly or carefully heed the warning. If any man worships the beast and his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of Yahweh, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation. And he shall be tormented with the fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. Revelation 14:9-10. For the light on this subject was spread as far in the stubble until it finally illuminates the whole earth. Revelation 18:1. And all who walk in this blaze will have their names placed in the Lamb's Book of Life. They will find deliverance from the enemy's last determined effort to plague the world, to plunge the world into the bottomless pit of the eternal ruin. For them, said the angel, shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. Daniel 12:1. For the symbolism, how now leads us to the final phase of the beast. The beast of the Daniel 7 and the leopard like beast of the Revelation 13 came up from the sea, but the two-horned beast came up from the earth. Revelation 13:11. And the scarlet colored beast stood in the wilderness. Revelation 17:3. So, to find the geographic location of each beast's government, it is necessary first to ascertain the symbolical meaning of the sea, the earth, and the wilderness. The sea locates the territory of the five beasts. Since in the realm of the nature, the sea is the storehouse home of the water, therefore, in the realm of the symbols, the sea must be the birthplace of the nation, the old country. The fire beast, the lion, bear, leopard, and the nondescript beast, along with the leopard, like beasts coming from the sea, you notice that they represent kingdoms that have arisen in the old country, just as history confirms. And as much as the sea locates the territory of these beasts, obviously, then, the earth locates the two-horned beast's domain as the birthplace of the nation is symbolized by the sea. Then the earth, the opposite of the sea, locates the domain of the two-horned beast away from the old country. But to find exactly which one of the new country's government it stands for, we must consider the characteristics of the beast itself, his two crowned horns, so two non-royalist rulers, while their lamb-like appearance forecasts useful innocency, and his having the power to dictate who should buy and who should not shows that he represents a nation that leads in the controlling of the world's wealth and industry. For the United States of America is the only government in the world. The answer to all these specifications, it originated in a new world, the earth, not in the territories of the ancient world, the sea. It is the only government which is lamb-like, useful, and Christian, established upon the innocent principles of peace and liberty, having two non-royalist ruling parties, crownless horns, the Republican and the Democratic, as the symbolical sea and earth, along with the beast. The characteristics perfectly locate the abode of each beast likewise. The wilderness locates the scarlet-colored beast of domain. By contrast, a wilderness is the opposite of a vineyard. And since a vineyard is figurative, as the home of Yahweh's people, Isaiah 5:7. The wilderness can only represent the home of the Gentiles. The beast being in the wilderness indicates that at the time it comes into the existence, there is a vineyard. Obviously, it would be superfluous to designate the wilderness if the whole world is wilderness. For the full details concerning these symbolical beasts, read The Shepherd's Rod, Volume 2. The certainty that both the vineyard and the wilderness are existing at the same time shows first that Babylon, riding, ruling the beast, reigns only over the wilderness Gentile world. And second, that from it are Yahweh's people called to go into the vineyard, the kingdom restored, where there are no sin, and where there is no fear of the receiving of the pledge of this kingdom, of the safety, the prophet Daniel wrote, and in the days of these kings shall the Yahweh of the heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever, Daniel 2:44. For the subject of the vineyard now necessitates the analysis, the 12-star crowned woman and her remnant, the living church. It is self-evident that the woman Babylon is a counterfeit of the woman that brought forth the son of Yahweh, Revelation 12:1, of whom the scriptures say, and when the dragon saw that he was cast unto this earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child, and to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might be a fly into the wilderness and to her place where she is nourished for a time and time and half a time from the face of the serpent. Revelation 12:13-14. It says, to begin with, we see from this scripture that the woman left her vineyard, her homeland, Palestine, and went into the Gentile world after her child was born, that is, in her Christian period, when the dragon persecuted her. That's actually in her apostolic period, but she was a Jewish. When the dragon persecuted her through the instrumentality of the Jews. Acts 8:1-13, 46-51. Next we see that after she was there for some time, conditions became such as to hinder her longer nourishing herself, and that it therefore became necessary that she be nourished by someone for a time and times and half a time. There, 3.5 years after Yahshua's resurrection, the church left Palestine the vineyard, and while she was in the Gentile world, wilderness, the serpent cast out of his mouth water as it fled after the woman, forced the heathen to be baptized into the Christianity and to join the church that he might cause her to be carried away and heathenized of the flood, Revelation 12:15. While thus flooded, she had to be nourished, sustained by the Yahweh, because many of her followers were heathenized, and nearly all of those who were not were carried to the death by the flood. So, had he not nourished her, kept her in existence by a miracle, the church would have perished during those dark ages of the religion. True, she has been able to nourish herself since the Reformation, but the unconverted flood are still in her midst. She has, however, this promise of the rescue, and the earth helping the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth, Revelation 12:16. Literally stated, the unconverted who are now in the midst of the Seventh-day Adventist Church are to be slain and buried. The converted ones are then to be taken into the kingdom. Then will the dragon be wroth with the woman and make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of Yahweh and have the testimony of Yahshua, Revelation 12:17. Stirred to fury over her purification, the dragon will make war with the remnant of her seed. Against her personally, though, he will not war, because her communicants, the 144,000, the first fruits, Revelation 7:3-8, 14:4, those who go first into the kingdom stand with the Lamb, the King on the Mount Zion, Revelation 14:1. His palace grounds, thus being the rulers of the tribes, they are symbolized by the crowned woman, and being in their own land, they are protected from the dragon, who consequently persecute only the remnant, those who are left behind, who are still in the Babylon, but who are finally called out of her, Revelation 18:4. For the full particulars on the Revelation 12, read the Shepherd Rod, Volume 2, page 64-82. The first fruits of the kingdom shall come as a result of the shaking, the separation in the church, as is demonstrated by the parables of the net and of the field. The good fish are removed from the net, the church, and put into the vessels, the kingdom, Matthew 13:48. And the wheat is taken from among the tares and put into the barn, the kingdom, Matthew 13:30. As bad fish, they are cast away. As tares, they are burned. For a detailed study of the harvest, read to tract number 3, the judgment and the harvest. The second fruits However, those that are still in Babylon after the purification are taken from among the bad, Revelation 18:4, rather than the bad from among the good, Matthew 13:49. For the dragon's warring against them is occasioned by their having the testimony of Yahshua with the spirit of the prophecy, Revelation 19:10, by becoming commandment keepers instead of worshippers of the beast and his image. The dragon's aim is to keep them from coming out of Babylon, and thus from going into the rapidly growing kingdom. Then it is, though, that the world shall behold all of Yahweh's people coming out of the Babylon's dominion into their own land. For the truth now being clearly established that the scarlet colored beast is a symbol of the dominion over which reigns Babylon the Great, the mother of the harlots, it follows that her boundaries will extend as far as the boundaries of the nations that bow down to her authority. Therefore, the call, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, that you receive not of her plague, Revelation 18:4, is a call for them to come out of her dominion, that they share not in her sins, nor receive of her plague. Those who respond to the Yahshua's bidding must have a sin-free place to go to, where they may dwell safely, though there be neither bars nor gates around it, Ezekiel 38:11. To this haven they shall be brought forth out of the nation, and there they shall dwell safely, all of them, Ezekiel 38:8. So all thy children shall be taught of the Yahweh, and great shall be the peace of thy children, Isaiah 54:13. Yahweh's people at that time can no more serve the Yahweh in Babylon and in Egypt than they could have in the days of Ezra or of Moses, for when the plagues are poured upon Babylon as the fire and the brimstone were poured upon Sodom and Gomorrah, then if they be living among the worldlings, they can no more escape the damage of the plagues than Lot should have survived the fire had he stayed in Sodom. So all who want to escape the foretold ruin barely must come out of Babylon, as Lot and his family came out of Sodom. And it shall therefore come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Yahweh's house shall be established in the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it, and many people shall go and say, come ye, and let us go up unto the mountain of the Yahweh, and to the house of Yahweh of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Yahweh from Yahushua, and he shall judge among the nations, and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift that sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Isaiah 2:2-4. Read also Isaiah 11:12-16. Thus saith Yahweh, Behold, I will take the children of the Israel from among the heathen, whether they be gone, and will gather them on every side, and bring them into their own land, and I will make them one nation in the land upon the mountains of Israel, and one king shall be king unto them all, and they shall be no more two nations, neither shall they be divided into two kingdoms any more at all, neither shall they defile themselves any more with their idols, nor with their detestable things, nor with any of their transgressions, but I will save them out of all their dwelling places wherein they have sinned, and will cleanse them. So shall they be my people, and I will be their Yahweh. And David, my servant, shall be king over them, and they all shall have one shepherd. They shall also walk in my judgments and observe my statutes and do them, and they shall dwell in the land that I have given unto Jacob my servant, wherein your fathers have dwelt, and they that dwell therein, even they and their children have children forever, and my servant David shall be their prince forever. Moreover, I will make a covenant of peace with them. It shall be an everlasting covenant with them, and I will place them and multiply them, and will set my sanctuary in the midst of them forevermore. My tabernacle also shall be with them. Yea, I will be their Yahweh. They shall be my people, and the heathen shall know that I, the Yahweh, do sanctify Israel when my sanctuary shall be in the midst of them forevermore. Ezekiel 37:21-28. In the confirmation of the truth that Yahweh's people are again to become a kingdom, Ezekiel prophesied of a new division of the land. For the prophet presents a division of the land entirely different from that of the Joshua's time, Joshua 17. It is to be in strips from the east to the west. Dan is to have the first portion in the north, and Gad the last portion in the south. Between the borders of these two are to be the portions of the rest of the tribes. The sanctuary is to be in the midst of the land, and adjacent to it is to be a city. See Ezekiel 48. The fact that such a division of the promised land has never been made shows that it is yet future. Also, the fact that the sanctuary is to be there, whereas it is not to be in the earth made new, Revelation 21:22, positively proves that this unique setup is premillennial. Moreover, the twofold fact that the name of the city is Yeshua is there, and that its location according unto the division of the land necessarily must be different from that of the old Jerusalem, shows that Jerusalem proper is not that city. Moreover, the scriptures plainly point out that the Gentiles will be driven out of the Holy Land. Then lifted I up mine eyes and saw, and behold, four horns. And I said unto the angel that talked with me, What be these? And he answered me, These are the horns which have scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. And the Yahweh showed me four carpenters. And said I, what come these to do? And he spake, saying, these are the horns which have scattered Judah, so that no man did lift up his head, but these are come to pray them to cast out this the horns of the Gentiles which lifted up their horn over the land of Judah to scatter it. Zechariah 1:18-21. Here we see, first, that the heathen powers and their scattering of Yahweh's ancient people are represented as the four horns, and later in their casting out of the Gentiles, they are represented as the four carpenters. Thus, it is predicted, also pictorially, that Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles only until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. Luke 21:24. Ezekiel 36:37. Jeremiah 30:31. Although our first question should be, what shall we do to avoid giving allegiance unto the enemies of Yahweh so as to be found worthy of a place in his kingdom when this evil time shall come? Yet the majority make their first question, who is God? For one to try on his own resources to explain who God is for him to try to do the impossible, a venture which can result only in the disappointment. This is seen in the fact that although the Bible plainly states that the place of the unwalled villages is in the mountains of the Israel, in the Israel's own land, Palestine, where the fathers of the Israelitish nation dwelt, and yet men have attempted to tell us that it is in America. Yahweh will spoil and judge the nations. He says, and they that dwell in the city of the Israel shall go forth and shall sit on fire and burn their weapons, both the shields and the bucklers, the bows and the arrows, and the handstaves, and the spears, and they shall burn them with a fire 7 years, so that they shall take no wood out of the field, neither cut down any out of the forest, for they shall burn their weapons with the fire, and they shall spoil those that spoil them, and rob those that rob them, saith Yahweh. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will give unto God a place there of grace in Israel, and the valley of the passengers on the east of the sea, and it shall stop the noses of the passengers on and there shall they bury Gog and all his multitude, and they shall call it the valley of Hammon Gog. And 7 months shall the house of Israel be barren of them, that they may cleanse the land. Yea, all the people of the land shall bury them, and it shall be unto them a renown the day that I shall be glorified, saith Yahweh. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh, now will I bring again the captivity of Jacob, and have mercy upon the whole house of Israel, and will be jealous for my holy name after that they have borne their shame and all their trespasses whereby they have trespassed against me, when they dwell safely in their own land and none made them afraid. And when I have brought them again from the people and gathered them out of the enemy's land, and am satisfied in them in the sight of many nations, then shall they know that I am the Yahweh, their Yahweh, which caused them to be led into the captivity among the heathen, that I have gathered them for their own unto their own land, and have left none of them any more there. Neither will I hide my face any more from them, for I have poured out my spirit upon the house of Israel, saith Yahweh. Ezekiel 39:15-29. For behold, in those days and in that time, when I shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all nations, and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat, and will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage, Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. Proclaim ye this among the Gentiles, prepare war, wake up the mighty man. Let all the men of war draw near. Let them come up, beat your plowshares and the swords and your pruning hoofs and the spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Assemble yourself and come, all ye heathen, and gather together yourself together around about thither, cause thy mighty ones to come down, O Yahweh. Let the heathen be wakened and tromp to the valley of the Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. Joel 3:1-9-12. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats, and he shall set the sheep on his right hand, and the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come ye blessed of my father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Matthew 25:32-34. But to them that are at his left hand shall he say, and these shall go away into the everlasting punishment, but the righteous and to life eternal. Matthew 25:46. For a complete study of the kingdom, read it number eight, Mount Zion at the 11th hour, and tract number 9, Behold, I Make All Things New. These are some of the future events that are soon to follow in the quick succession and the ushering in of the kingdom. Then follows the closing of the probation and the pouring out of the Spirit, or pouring out the seven last plagues, which shall fall upon those who figuratively stand on the left hand, those who are outside of the Palestine. Then while the plagues are falling, the mightiest of all battles shall be fought, the battle of that great day of the Yahweh Almighty, as the long expected end of the world, the army again, Revelation 16:12-16, coming back now to our present world crisis. Sure, as the previously mentioned, the crown kings of today, Revelation 13, have already dwindled to a handful, and since the churches in their cry for peace and safety are endeavoring to clasp hands with one another, so we should do wisely now to inquire into the current events that may fulfill prophecy. That's our next subtitle. The current events that may fulfill prophecy. Here we see, first, that the heathen powers in their scattering of Yahweh's ancient people are represented as the four horns, and later in the casting out of the Gentiles, they are represented as the four carpenters. Thus, it is predicted also pictorially that Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles only until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. Luke 21:24. Read Ezekiel 36:37. Jeremiah 30:31. Although, our first question should be, what shall we do to avoid giving allegiance unto the enemies of Yahweh, so as to be found worthy of a place in his kingdom when this evil time shall come? Yet, the majority make their first question, who is Gog? That which I just read, that needs to be taken off. I had read that before. We'll skip over the current events that may fulfill prophecy. Because the bone of the contention among the angry nations of today is the world's markets, and because the churches are threatened by the totalitarian governments, and thus urged to press together in order to preserve Christianity, the fact is thereby evidence that the time is nigh for the arrival of the predicted worldwide religious, political, commercial empire. The supposed remedy for the world is now Now it is seen that the prophecy of the Revelation 17 and 18, that last scene in the drama played by the nations, is about to be enacted. For the warring nations are already divided into the two distinct ideological camps. On the one side are the democratic government, while on the other side are the totalitarian or the republican government. If the latter continues successfully to prosecute their relentless conquest for the world dominion and sovereignty, the only victorious way out for the Christian nations, as they humanly view their plot, will be to surrender their power to the Catholic Church, for sin Catholic sit against Catholic and Protestant against Protestant in a mortal combat, they will in dread of fear be inspired to saddle the beast and to re-establish the church, re-establish the Catholic Church as its driver, in order for the freeing of themselves from the shackles of the totalitarianism and to safeguard Christianity. They will see victory in this stratagem if it be denied them in war, for the very evident reason that many of the millions of the communicants of these churches in every army of totalitarian states allied in the conflict will honor the dictates of the church above those of their respective government. Such a combination of the circumstances will result in a replication of the international church and state rule of the Middle Ages, and will relegate to the scrap heap the world's finest instrument of the human liberty. For the divinely inspired Constitution of the United States of America, since this development will make the world's ills worse, it will signalize that the four angels have let loose the winds, but that the 144,000 Israelites are sealed, Revelation 7:3-8. And what is more, a system that will, on the pain of death for the nonconformity, enact a form of worship and the violation of the conscience, is anything but democracy and Christianity. Enforced religion by the Catholic Church is nothing less than an order of truckling subjects rather than an order of voluntary disciples. For the fast falling crown kings of the nation, symbolized by the crown horns of the leopard-like beast, and the contrast with ascending crownless rulers of the nation, symbolized by the crownless horns of the scarlet-colored beast, show that the world is passing out of the period of the royalist governments and into the period of the non-royalist governments. A totalitarian overthrow of the democracies would endanger the continuation of the nationalistic Christianity. To withstand this storm, the Christian governments will before long see upon the beach the predicted world queen, Babylon the Great, and she will say in her heart, I sit a queen and am no widow, and shall see no sorrow. Revelation 18:7. This church and state union will bring a time of the trouble, such as never was since there was a nation. Daniel 12:1. Nevertheless, whosoever will save or protect his life by the sacrificing of the truth shall lose it. And says the Yahshua, and whosoever will lose or risk his life for my sake by standing firm for the truth shall find it. Matthew 16:25. And the prophet declares that at that time shall the mark stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as it never was since there was a nation, even under that same time, and at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but their wicked shall do wickedly, and none of their wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. Daniel 12:1-10. Without Yahshua, no system can unravel the world's tangle. It can only make the knot worse. Babylon the Great, therefore, can endure but a short time, one symbolical hour, and then she will be swept away by the crownless horn, Revelation 17:16, the result of time of the trouble, finally culminating in the close of the probation, and in the triumph and coronation of the King of Kings and Sovereign of Sovereigns, Revelation 19:16, whose right it is to reign. So it shall be that in the days of these kings shall the Yahweh of the heavens set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, but it shall stand forever. Daniel 2:44. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. Matthew 24:34. Then, and not until then, may the world expect peace. Thus, the more sure word of the prophecy, which never fails to tell the truth, declares that neither England nor Germany, but rather Babylon the Great, the image of the beast, will finally, for a short season, profit by the war permanently, though, and none but the Yahweh's people will be benefited. They shall be made free by the becoming of a kingdom which shall never be destroyed or left to other people, Daniel 2:44. How necessary, then, that we retain the light thus far shed in our minds by the never-failing word of the prophecy and its historical fulfillment, so that we not only may depart from the path that leads to destruction, but also may walk in the path of the eternal security. Under this end, let us consider a chapter of the Bible which has ever baffled the students of prophecy, but which now, in the light of the presence of truth, has become one of the most simple and comprehensible of the Bible's prophecy. Daniel 11, the summary, that which is noted in the scripture. That's our last subtitle. This brings in, let's step this out, contact this 11th alcohol. We're going to close out of the song.